Well, we are very fortunate now to welcome Abubakar Salim, the founder and CEO of Surgent Studios, here today to discuss the impending release of their debut title, Tales of Kinzera Zhao. Abu, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to talk to you. I've been looking forward to this one since kind of its inception. I think a lot of gamers probably know you as the voice of Bayek from Assassin's Creed Origins. But I think far more perhaps know you now as the man who made an emotional debut at this past year's Game Awards in a reveal where you showed this project that you've been working on that was born of grief, expressed in your father's passing. And then you had this massive stage that you got to be on to show your art.
I know, man. I know. It's really, again, like it's always surreal, like to be in this sort of place of, again, as an actor, you kind of do your thing, you know, you go on TV, you do, you know, sometimes do voiceover and stuff and you kind of move on, right? And like a lot of the time, like whenever I've done stuff, I've always been like, okay, this is cool, this is fine, this is whatever. Getting on stage and then being in a position where I am now like sort of revealing and opening my heart, it's very surreal, man. It's very surreal. I'm super excited for it.
It was, I think the crack in your voice at a certain moment that let people know just how important this project was for you. And I have to think that that is both a relief and this whole new wave of pressure that so many eyes showed up at the Game Awards there and those people cheering. It had to be cool.
I think for me, if I'm ever doing something, I try and be honest, right? Like I'm a gamer myself. Like I care and I want people to care as well. And I understand like it is, you have to put passion behind something in order for people to believe. And I think like that's that. And that was just me just being honest, man. That was just me being real, you know? And I feel like otherwise I'd be, what's the point of lying to you on stage? You know what I mean? And what's the point of presenting something that doesn't come from the heart? And I feel like, again, it's that same sense of like, I understand the time that players spend in these worlds and in these games, and it's a lot of time. And you know, life's short, man. So for someone to give you that time, it means a lot. So yeah, it really was important to kind of relay that and really give that sort of sense of passion, because I know what it means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. Wonderful answer. Goodness. I'm fascinated by the idea that in order to bring this art to gamers, for them to invest their time, you needed a studio. And as a result of that, you founded Surgent Studios. In a recent IGN interview, you said that if you'd known what you know now, you may not have done it quite that same way. But talk to me a little bit about Surgent Studios, the process therein, and what you might have done differently.
Absolutely. So look, I mean, so I founded the studio back in 2019, the end of 2019, like with this intention of, you know, wanting to tell stories, like cool stories across different media, right? And the first one that that I really wanted to do was a video game. But I had no idea what it meant to make a video game, right? I'm normally used to working on film sets and TV sets and even theater to a degree. But making a game is like a different beast. So I thought, you just pull a couple of people in and, you know, you kind of conjure something, right? But oh, how wrong I was. there's so much work that is needed in order to deliver this experience. So I ended up just, you know, sliding into so many people's DMs in regards to being like, how do you make this game? And this is the game that I want to make. And then had to also go over the hurdle of getting people to trust that, you know, I am a real person. I'm not just Bayek asking to make a game and I'm going to scam you of your time. Mm-hmm. So like there was an element of that as well, but there was a lot of, funnily enough, ignorance to the building of the studio that I think allowed me to push through and be in the sense of like, okay, learn as I go along, you know, and build as I go along. Listen to the people that you're chatting to, the game devs, the people who have experienced it. And And yeah, it was terrifying and hard at the beginning, right? You know, like things like business insurance or forming a company, like it isn't like simple stuff, right? You need a team of people around you, but it's at the same time, it's been incredibly rewarding because I feel like, okay, I now know what is needed and what is necessary to build the foundations of a safe space in order to deliver cool content.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so forgive the lead on this question then. Mm. That implies that because you now have that base, this is something you would want to continue doing.
After 100%. Yeah, I think like, you know, for me, it's it's that whole thing of what started as like a singular project, which I had this idea of, you know, just wanting to convey this art, like almost like making a film to a degree, right? I then learn as I go along that there is so much more to just making a game and building it. Like there's the people behind it. There's the players, the community that follow through with it, that kind of continue on this journey with you. It just adds this level of like, yeah, I want to continue building. I want to continue kind of growing. I want to continue learning. And yeah, it's now in my mind become a space where I truly believe like we can actually have a really positive and good impact on the industry just by leading through practice, right? And by, you know, kind of going with that. So yeah, that's my kind of mentality on it now, you know? It's like we've built a foundation, a good space, a base to really play upon and build mm-hmm. upon that respects, you know, both the player as well as the developer. Mm-hmm. And by leading with that, it just allows us to kind of grow and set examples for other people who want to start studios and want to mm-hmm. tell games and want to make games. Like you can do it this way, you know, and it works.
Mm-hmm. It's very uplifting, I think, to hear you say that because since the studio's founding in 2019, we saw COVID, work from home.
Yeah.
We saw this amazing swell of hiring in the games industry. And then this, more recently, a lot of jobs lost and people kind of restructuring, reorganizing. And so it feels like you started a studio, perhaps one of the most tumultuous times to start a studio. And now we're in this like final stretch where you're almost here to share. And it's odd. It's got to be a weird kind of dichotomy of the two
feelings. Yeah, I mean, the industry is always changing and fluctuating, man. And I think that's because it's still quite young. Like, there's mm-hmm. still so much, you know, to be learned. Mm-hmm. And that's both a negative and a positive. I think, mm-hmm. like, the negative element, obviously, is the fact that there are so much changes and it can really affect people's lives. And mm-hmm. and that's scary. The positive, however, is that these changes can be, you know, reacted to and acted upon quicker than mm-hmm. the film industry or the, you know, the TV space where it's very set in its ways. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, and look, we're always facing challenges. Like every year there is something. And I think mm-hmm. like ultimately the best way of preparing for it is, again, it's just being honest, being prepared mm-hmm. and just being in the moment, man. Like I feel like, you know, COVID, for example, kind of forced people to work from home, right? Mm-hmm. And we were always going to be a remote studio. But it made us double down on that. It made mm-hmm. us really double down on this idea of like, yeah, you can build from home and you can mm-hmm. work from home and build really cool experiences, you know? And that's something we continue on doing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, cool. What's next then? You know, all right. So how do we ensure that the people feel comfortable and respected? You listen to them, man. Like you just listen. Like it's as simple as that. And I think a lot of the time people, and I can see it, people get caught up in business and mm-hmm. they get caught up in the idea of like the company and the future of the company and what you have to do there. And I get that there is an element of that, but really truly the company's the people. And I think like that's essentially, you know, the key to kind of cracking the sense of like how do we feel safe. It's just by listening.
Mm-hmm. Is that the benefit of being small?
I think so. I think like it's the benefit of being small, but I also think like it's a practice that you have to build from the get-go and ensure mm-hmm. that even as you grow, even as you build further and as you push further, you adhere to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think again, it's very easy to be lost in the madness of the industry and, you know, how to make money and what's the best game out there to make, or like the genre zeitgeist, that kind of stuff, right? And there's a lot of noise, essentially. But as long as you can filter out that noise and really kind of be like, okay, what will make you happy? What will actually, you know, what will help you in order to help me here? Like, how can we work together on this? You start doing that and you realize, and you start learning essentially like, oh, okay, this, we're just building here to have fun. I think actually a really good example of that is, you know, you look at someone like a Supergiant, for example, mm-hmm. and what they, you know, what they build. They just build games that you can tell are games that they want to play and want to have fun with. Mm-hmm. And I think like, and that kind of shows with, you know, then with the content that they deliver as well as the audience and how they play it and how they take in their games. Mm-hmm. So it is just, so in my mind, it's like, cool, I want to emulate that. I want to build on that. I want to, you know, I want to play with that, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to say, especially in the last year or so, I think we've seen some of the most brilliant highs of gaming and some of the very frustrating lows. So it's a good statement for sure. Well, let's get specifically to Tales of Kunzera there. When that trailer debuted at the Game Awards, I know I was taken aback. And I have a special place in my heart for Metroidvanias, but this brilliantly lit Metroidvania based on Bantu culture, I loved it. And the opening line, I even wrote it down because it just got to me. Every story begins at the end of another.
Yeah.
Whew. That's cool, man. Tell me about it.
Thank you. Yeah, no, man. Thank you. Like, that it's true, man. Like, if you really think about it, like, every story does begin at the end of another. And like, it's one of those ones where I think it really kind of hit home after my father passed away, just how the world continues spinning, how just everything just continues going on. And I think that sort of mentality is a grounding reality of like, okay, we need to carry on, and we need to, you know, reflect to a degree, mm-hmm. and build your own story, your own path. And yeah, Tales of Kunzera was really born out of this feeling of, you know, it kind of started from the question of, you know, who am I without a parent, in a way, without that kind of guide. You know, this, you know, my father meant so much to me when I was growing up, and he was the guy who essentially, you know, introduced me to games, introduced me to tech, introduced me to that art form. And I think to then have, you know, for him to then not be there anymore has been a very sort of weird, interesting process as I've kind of gone along. And really, Tales of Kunzera is more like it's an ode to, again, as I say, like at the Game Awards, an ode to the people we've loved and lost, right? It's playing in these worlds that are fantastic and beautiful and you know, really vibrant and fun, but at its core, it's something that we all universally feel. And, you know, I call it the human truth in regards to, like, it's that sense of what makes us all human, no matter who you are, no matter what, you know, your race, your gender is. Mm-hmm. It's something that universally connects us and makes us see one another as, oh, okay, we are on this same plane to a degree. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that's what Tales of Kunzera is. It's a representation of that and you know, a play on that. But it's more of a celebration rather than necessarily an education, you know? And I think, like, the reason why, you know, even, like, we look at the Bantu culture, that's just my perspective, man. You know, that's what I grew up with. Like, I've got a huge family. You know, very much all of them are in Kenya. Mm-hmm. So whenever whenever my family events are happening, it's with them. Like, that's just my world. So mm-hmm. it just made sense to kind of be like, yeah, this is kind of, you know, this is the story of this. You know what I mean? And because it is so personal, it just made sense to kind of write what you know. Do you know what I mean? And build on what you know.
Sure.
And that's kind of where we've come from with it. And, you know, side scrollers was a game with the type of games that I played with my dad as a kid all the time. Sonic, Mario, Castlevania, like mm-hmm. that was kind of what I played. So it just made sense to kind of have our first, you know, pass at it be those mm-hmm. games.
There's a neat parallel, I think, in that many of the most successful Metroidvanias, you certainly start off at a baseline. Sometimes you lose abilities at the very beginning of the game, but other times you have a baseline and you gain powers and abilities mm. and things as you go through. And I wonder if that doesn't perhaps parallel how you've gone through your life, and perhaps since your dad has been gone, that loss and then having to build back up. Is that an accidental parallel, or did Metroidvania as a style fit?
It just made sense, I think. And with ours is very specific, right? So we give the players double jump, dash, you know, and quite a few abilities from the get-go, which you normally have to gain in normal Metroidvanias, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason, you know, again, the big reason why we gave that is from the get-go is because, you know, Zhao isn't a baby when this happens. Mm-hmm. You know, Zhao is, he's a young adult. Mm-hmm. And so he's gained, you know, he knows how to double jump, he knows how to dash, you know what I mean? Those are things that he's learned. So we wanted to kind of show, like, again, it's like every story begins at the end of another, but it doesn't necessarily mean that your story started there and then. You know, you had a bit of story before, but this is the moment now where we want to follow you. And I think, like, that is something that, you know, we wanted to kind of come in with. But yeah, I think that Metroidvania, the genre, is such a fantastic sort of conduit for the meaning of what grief is, or the journey of grief, starting, you know, being thrown into a world that you have no idea about, and then having to gain abilities over time. Like, that's powerful, man. And I think, like, that is something that we really wanted to kind of capture with Zhao.
Mm-hmm. The idea of using the Bantu culture, it to me was really cool, because I'm hearing, you know, Kalonga, God of Death. I don't know who that is. I'm so because of games and literature and where I've grown up, Norse mythology, Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, they make their way into my media quite often.
Yeah.
But I don't hear much from Kenya or from the Bantu culture or anything like that. So I feel like I have this whole new world ready for me. I think I have a friend, Kay Asante, who wrote in and asked about the challenges of bringing your vision to be realized, and being that you aren't, and he put in quotes, the usual voices that we see in games. Is there pressure to deliver on that vision? I would infer that by usual voices, he means of race, of Bantu culture, of other elements. I wonder if you could.
I'd say, you know what? There is and there isn't. Mm. And I think the challenges are this, right? I think if I kind of set myself this goal of trying to be the representation or the singular voice that represents Bantu culture, I think I'm setting myself up for failure. Because again, at the end of the day, there are so many other people out there as well who have, you know, who are of Bantu origin, who have their own stories and their own sort of, you know, beliefs, and they have as much reason to be listened to as I do. And I think so ultimately, so really truly the challenge is, you have to almost be like, you have to not think of it that way, you know, be like, okay, I am now the sole owner of this, or I have to hit it well in order to do it really well, because then otherwise other people will hate it and will never hear these stories again. Like, I think I've kind of really set the goal is to inspire other people to tell stories like this, to kind of share them, to be better, essentially, right? And I think, like, that's more exciting, you know. There's something that I love about, you know, for example, when I was in South Africa, I was filming Raised by Wolves in South Africa, and the gaming community out there is huge. Like, it's massive. And it's, you know, there's so many stories out there that need to be told and need to be listened to. Even in Kenya, for example, there are there are gaming studios out there and developers who are making really cool content who have every right to be seen and every right to kind of be heard. So I think, like, in a way, I've been very lucky and blessed with the fact that I've been, you know, EA have kind of provided this platform for me. You know, Jeff Keighley at the Game Awards gave me a platform to talk about my game. Like, I've been very blessed in that front. But it is to open the door of, like, all right, you're wondering who Kalunga is. You go on this wiki wormhole and you're like, oh, he's a god of death. Oh, but he's also a place. And now we've got, like, you know, other elements to share and express. You then, you know, another game developer might be, oh yeah, well, cool. Here's my take on Kalunga, you know, who is like this, I don't know, badass sort of like Batman-esque kind of, you know, character. And that's dope. You know what I mean? And it's like, and that's kind of what I want to be inspiring and exploring, is this sense of like, yeah, let me hear your story too. So it's both a challenge, but also a weird sort of blessing, because I'm just simply opening the door for other people to show really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping it continues in that way.
The I love what you say about not being the sole voice, because I, in my mind, that is just a pressure that is unfair when people are asked to be the representation, the singular soul. And it also, I feel like, can both bring eyes to your project, but also detract from the game.
Yeah.
And that has got to be a balance that you have to
walk. Man. And this is the thing. And this is why I'm always like, it's, as I say, like, okay, it's in the Bantu sort of world because that is where I'm from, you know? But really, truly, the game is about the journey of grief, which is something that we will all experience, be it through the loss of a parent or the loss of a family member or the loss of a job or, you know, any form of loss. There is, you know, this is something that will, that we're all connected by. And I feel like that is, to me, what kind of what the game is about. That's what this game is about, you know. It's about that journey. It is, you know, it's not to say, for example, like it could have been you know, Norse or Greek. It could have been, but ultimately, again, like, because I'm in that driving seat, it's from, you know, it's from my perspective, but also my take on what grief means as well.
Gotcha. We had a lot of people write in. One of the questions that showed up from listener Anubis, but also many others, were the inspirations in terms of games specifically. I think it's easy as gamers. I can look at the recent Prince of Persia that just came out.
Yeah, I know, man.
And, you know, that's not how game development works. But, like,
I know, isn't it?
I see parallels, you know.
Can you imagine? If only it was that easy to, like, you know, build upon and make it, we would be so far in the future right now. So at the time, what really inspired sort of the building blocks of this game was Ori and the Blind Forest, right? We were building this game, and Ori and the Blind Forest was, you know, kind of doing its thing. Will of the Wisps came out while we were in the middle of development of this game, right? So Blind Forest, Dead Cells was a big play on that as well. I used to love playing Devil May Cry as a kid. So, you know, I've always wanted, like, that element of juggling, you know, the juggling the enemy and the combat and the fluidity there. There was this almost feeling of chaos that you get with Devil May Cry. But if you're precise and kind of really, really key, or, like, know what you're doing, you can find the magic and the fluidity and the music of the dance of combat. So that was really, you know, a big play of it. And, I mean, story-wise, really, truly, man, like, It harkens back to games like Kingdom Hearts or, like, you know, Golden Sun, as I mentioned on the stage, like these heartfelt games, which was, it was more than just, you know, run and kill. There was a journey there that the protagonist was going through, you know, and I think that's essentially really the big inspirations on that front. So, yeah, it's funny because, you know, when Prince of Persia came out, like, I think a lot of us were like, oh my God, what the hell? But again, it's good because it shows that it works, you know, that this kind of world works. And, you know, Ubisoft are brilliant. Like, they're amazing in regards to the developers. I remember when I was working on Origins, the love that the developers had for the game industry as a whole was infectious. It's why I started, right? And what Lost Crown is a perfect example of is, like, a large studio with a lot of people with a lot of experience creating a brilliant and succinct and clean Metroidvania with combatual elements. Like, I mean, it's like flawless, man. Like, it's such a good game. And the thing that really excites me is just the love for that just strengthens and puts, you know, Metroidvanias, especially, like, what is normally considered, like, a niche genre, it puts it on the map for other people and other players to kind of dive into and play. And yeah, I feel like it's, like, perfect timing, to be honest. You know,
I had the same thought, because I think there are some that see games like that as competitive, whereas I'm like, last year was the year of fighters. People didn't buy just Street Fighter or just
World Cup. Man,
and both, they got, you know, they checked them out, and they checked out lots of games in that genre. So one of the things you mentioned, EA Originals, Kevin Ainsworth wrote in asking a bit more about the process of becoming an EA Original. How did you end up with them?
Oh, man.
just touched on something, didn't we?
Yeah, no, it's funny, man. It's funny. So, look, I've got a good friend of mine who was working at EA at the time. And I told him I wanted to make a game. And he was like, cool, man. Well, look, as long, you know, when you've got like a pitch deck or whatever, let me know. And I'm like, pitch deck? What's a pitch deck? Mm-hmm. You know, I had just thought like, okay, I'm just going to put all my savings into starting a studio and building a team of people. And maybe the game will be made in a year. Very much that mentality of like, it's easy to make a game, right? Cut to like the moment of like, oh God, this is actually, this isn't as easy as I thought.
How young you were in 2019.
I'm telling you, man. So yeah, no, but I had I'd built a pitch deck because I had to, the idea of a gameplay pillars and all this sort of stuff. And it was at a time again when COVID was rife. No one was meeting people in person. But I'd sent it to my mate, and my mate then sent it to the EA partners, the production team there. And he didn't tell me. He was like, so I sent your deck to the team up here. You might get an email soon. Cut to getting an email with like the people who run the originals program. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, right, now I have to pitch this idea, mm-hmm. this game to them. And, you know, I pitched it very much like they were one of a few people who I ended up pitching to, again, still learning what pitching actually meant. Like, again, I'd done TV and film pitching or been aware of that as a process, didn't really know it was a game thing. Mm-hmm. I pitched to them and not having any idea really what was going to happen next. And I had another mate of mine who was a lawyer who had worked in he'd worked in games, but really more so film and TV. Mm-hmm. Anyway, next thing I know, I get an email from the EAP team basically saying, hey, we'd love to, you know, to bring you on board. And I'm like, oh, great. And they send me like this head of term sheet and the contracts and everything. And I'm looking at this. And as an actor, most of the time my agents deal with it, right? I don't right. necessarily have to worry about it. So I remember thinking, God, I can't share this with my agents because this isn't an acting film thing. So I sent it to my mate who's a lawyer, and he was like, this is so cool. This is great. Mm-hmm. Got through the process of that, man, and like, literally, yeah, from October 2020 to now, we've been working together like relentlessly in refining what this game is, you know, what the studio is about, our direction as a studio. Like, they've helped put a lot of things that, you know, production pipelines and elements that we wouldn't necessarily have thought of as a thing. They've helped mm-hmm. us do that, right? QA testing, like, they've just been so invaluable as a source of information. From they're industry veterans, right? Mm-hmm. And they kind of bring this level of knowledge that I wouldn't necessarily know. Mm-hmm. It also helps because, you know, as a studio, I was very much of the mentality of like, I want to build it from the ground up from people who don't necessarily, you know, who have the passion of wanting to make games and really want to, you know, learn more about that process, but aren't necessarily, they haven't been in the industry for like 20, 30 years. Do you know what I mean? I wanted it to almost be like, now we're like the underdogs, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So, but having that knowledge and that kind of that openness from EA of the mm-hmm. originals team to help us form that has been so invaluable, man.
It's so cool to hear. Again, we talk about industry expansions and contractions and the kind of the good news, bad news that has kind of come with it. So it's really nice to hear such an uplifting story about that, particularly given the goal of the EA Originals program, yeah. You know. But we've seen your game, the Game Awards, Steam Next Fest, Nintendo Direct, and now an Xbox Partner Preview. Yeah. That is wild and exciting. I'd have to think intimidating.
Yeah. It's like the more exposure we get, the more kind of the players are going to be like, all right, show me how good it is, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. there is a, you know, we've been very lucky and blessed to have so much exposure and so much, you know, to play with. But yeah, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. But, you know, the beauty again is that we have so much to share. And like, even now, like, you know, the fact that with the Xbox sort of, showcase and the trailer that we've kind of given, it's a, you know, pure gameplay. It's like looking at gameplay, looking at what makes this game, you know, why is it fun, why is it kinetic, you know, why is it electric? And mm-hmm. you know, yeah, we gave you guys a demo at Steam Next Fest, but that was literally like the sort of the top of like the icing in regards mm-hmm. to what this, you know, this really, you know, hopefully what people see is a beautiful and very, you know, layered cake mm-hmm. that they get to kind of dive into. Yeah, it's it's very wild, man, how what I'm witnessing is consoles and companies are kind of uniting on this sense of like, okay, this is more than just a game.
Mm-hmm.
This is a human experience. This is an art form. This is mm-hmm. an actual art piece. Let's just champion and shout about it. Mm-hmm. You know, Nintendo, Xbox, Microsoft, Steam, you know, PlayStation, like there's just love from them, man. Mm-hmm. And it is just solely coming from the fact that it's because it's a game driven by love rather than mm-hmm. necessarily driven with this idea of, you know, how do we make money? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I think gamers they latch on to the genuine feel. Like mm-hmm. seeing you talk on stage, seeing the game in Next Fest, seeing even this gameplay trailer, it feels like it's born of wanting to give a great gameplay experience and tell a story, not make money, not just be a formulaic cookie cutter approach.
100%.
Mm-hmm. In this gameplay trailer, we see a bit more about, you know, game design, the abilities, mm-hmm. some of the masks that do that. Can you talk a little bit about kind of putting together this trailer to show some of the actual gameplay elements?
So we wanted to really show off like just what you can do in this game and like, you know, talk even about the biomes that you'll explore in regards to the game and how even they were sort of built from or pulling from the shades of grief and like what that actually means, right? You know, the fact that we play with this idea of switching seamlessly between these two different masks, the mask of the sun and the mask of the moon, and how they both kind of work with one another. They balance one another to a degree. One is good for crowd control. Another is really kind of melee based. You know, they both have projectile abilities that are unique to their own mask as well, but they can also be used together to a degree. You know, the moon, which players have actually already felt, you know, is able to freeze, you know, kind of rushing water that allows it, that then makes it into an obstacle or something that you can use to kind of traverse, right? Whereas the mask of the sun has a projectile that allows you to reach tough spaces or trigger mm-hmm. elements from afar, and that is used then, you know, but it can also be used in a combatual sense and pierce through enemies, you know, and kind of, you know, also, you know, break shields to a degree. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, this is something that we really wanted to kind of show us, like, look, you can use, you know, both masks work with one another to a mm-hmm. degree. Something that's really cool as well are like, it isn't just Zhao and Kalunga, right? Mm-hmm. There are characters that you will interact with and meet on your journey out there, and each one, you know, again, having maybe their own shade of what they're going through kind of reflected on Zhao. Mm-hmm. So this is, again, just to show the depth and level of like what we've got to kind of give to players, which, mm-hmm. again, in my eyes, is like super exciting.
Mm-hmm. The art style stands out so strongly, at least to me.
Right.
These brilliant purples and blues, and then to me, it's just gorgeous in motion. And I wonder if you could talk about how you landed on that art style. We know the inspirations of the Bantu culture, but I mean, like, you talked about why Metroidvania, but like, did you guys go through phases of design for these characters
before you settled? Yeah, man. Yeah, we really kind of looked at the tribes of, you know, of Bantu cultures, you know, and like looking at like the Zulu, the Xhosa, the Maasai, like it's pulling from, you know, these spaces where color is vibrant, it's alive, you know, and that really kind of influenced all of the decisions that we made in regards to kind of painting this world, this picture. Mm-hmm. You know, every time I've found myself in Kenya, for example, with family, you know, they have these lesos, these beautiful sort of fabrics that are so colorful and so vibrant, and it is really just pulling from that and playing with that, you know, and honoring that. So that's really where the art style comes from. And really, like, you know, the character designs and the 3D world itself and like that kind of almost animated sort of like look, the anime kind of look, it just pulls from the fact that I love Dragon Ball Z and I love, you know, Shaman King. And like, you know, and it's kind of playing on our vibe of that. And, you know, even the comic style-esque nature of the characters as well. Like, again, this is just stuff that I grew up with and I wanted to add our own take on and really play on, because and this is what I keep stressing, like, this is a game that is really, truly just a celebration of life. Mm-hmm. Like, it's as much as it is about the journey of grief, it's a celebration of life and a celebration of, like, the things that I grew up with as a kid and I enjoyed and I wanted to dive into and I wanted to play. I'm just playing this. I feel like I'm a kid, basically, just playing again, man. Like, this whole process of the game development has just been me being a giant kid.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the masks and the way you're talking about telling this story that in some ways runs not opposite, but differently. That, like, there's a speed running community that might try to blow through story and just do the gameplay. How much is there for just the gameplay community or just the story community? Like, do you have settings in the game?
Yeah, we want to basically, again, it's as much as the game is about story and driven by story, because at its heart, I do believe that story is king. You've got to respect the medium and you've mm-hmm. got to really kind of ensure that the story you're telling fits it right. So I'm not going to turn around and create a walking sort of cinema game, because mm-hmm. otherwise I just make a movie. Like, it just makes sense to do that, right? So yeah, we've got speedrunners in mind. We've got those kind of, those real hard challenges. You know, there's people who want hard gameplay in mind, because again, it's part of the enjoyment of a game, right? I mean, mm-hmm. like the combat trials, for example, they're optional elements that also have an influence on Zhao's journey, but they're optional. They're not part of that main critical path of the story of kind of going through what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're tough. Not easy, man. They're hard. And that is us, kind of paying respect to the players out there who want a challenge, who mm-hmm. want to feel that sense of tension, that angst in a way. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like it's for players. Like, this game is for players, and it's we tried to build it in this way that it's for people who wouldn't necessarily jump into a Metroidvania to begin with or think like that's the first port of call for a game, but it's also for those who avidly love this genre and want to dive into the secrets and find out more and learn more and elements of backtracking as well and kind of 100%ing it, completionists. I'm a massive completionist. If I love a game and I'm really into it, I will platinum it to the sun, or kind of get all the trophies of what I need. Mm-hmm. So like it's really important for us to kind of respect that and represent that.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think the average player is going to play it versus those completionists?
Oh man,
it's such an unfair question.
It's such a good question though. I mean, like but it's a good one. I would, we're going with essentially the sort of crit path will take about, between sort of 8-10, maybe, mm-hmm. 11 hours. That's okay. The crit path. I'd say mm-hmm. In regards to the completionist, it's probably going to be maybe 15 odd, mm-hmm. maybe, 16. I think, again, one of the things that we really wanted to be led by as well was to create an experience that respects time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a dad now, and I find time being very, very kind of spare.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to play an experience where I can get, it's almost like watching a really cool TV series or a season of TV, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of also what I, respect about what Joseph Farris does with mm-hmm. his games and at Hazelight. Like, the games are they're about 12-hour, 15-hour experiences. It's a good season of TV
mm-hmm.
that you feel complete by at the end. And you're like, that was a great experience. That was, and also it was at a price that feels like it was worth the cost, right? He's mm-hmm. not charging you $70 for an experience of 10 to 12 hours. He's charging you a decent price for what you're going to get. And mm-hmm. that's something that we really wanted to practice as well with us, right? And deliver a really lovely experience at a decent cost, like the price of a pizza or a McDonald's, right? And mm-hmm. and but still feel like you've got something cool out of it. So yeah, I'd say 15 hours, man, truly for the completionist, 15 to 16. And again, it depends on your skill, man. I can't wait for speedrunners to break this game, mm-hmm. to really complete this game in under, I don't know, 6 hours or whatever. That would be crazy. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's possible, man. We've seen it.
To even touch on pricing, I feel like that's a narrative and discussion that consistently has been coming up in the last year or so. How much to price your game? $70 games struggle. $40 games does well, but then you don't get return of investment. And I feel like communities are wondering about that. But I love the approachability of it's a price point that is fair. Had to be. Did you guys have to really have conversations about it, or was that something that?
To be honest, again, like it was a conversation, but also not. I think the beauty of being able to run a company is that you can just say something and it happens. So you know what I mean? Like it's quite nice to be able to be like, actually, let's go for $20, and you know, be like, oh, but what about you? Like, no. Like, do it 20. And it's like you just go with it, right? But yeah, it is. There's, I think it's a balance that. And this is more of a question really for developers and a conversation for developers to have in regards to like, and look, don't get me wrong, the games industry is expensive to run. Like it's not cheap, but at the same time, it comes down to the decisions that you make during that, you know, during that time. I think there's something really beautiful about watching a film that had like zero budget, but is able to explode and do so well because of the content of what they deliver and the scope that they played with. Like limitations are blessings in disguise because you know the walls of what you're playing in. And I think like that to me is what is really key and what was really kind of influential to not only the price point, but also the kind of stuff that we wanted to do. You begin focusing on the story that you want to tell and the experience that you want to deliver with the limits that you have. Like, don't get me wrong, I could have designed this game as this huge, massive open world sort of, you know, with all sorts of crazy, like, life service, whatever. But that's not really honest, and that isn't the game that I wanted to deliver.
Sure.
So you just have to kind of keep marrying your own expectations with a sense of, like, focus and kind of be able to be like, all right, cool, that makes sense. Now let's look at the you know, the player. What feels fair to them? What makes them think, man, this is like a steal? Because in that way, you then are basically saying, yeah, I'm respecting not only your time, but also the fact that, you know, money's tight at the moment. You know, we live in a world where not many people have a lot of money. And I think like there's that element that also rings true with, you know, the majority of the populace of the world. Mm-hmm. So I know for a fact, like when I was growing up, I wasn't allowed to, you know, buy many games. Like it wasn't like I was open to. I mean, like you look at things like Game Pass, for example, now, and the beauty of what that gives to players is this openness of being able to play as many games as possible. But like, you know, I didn't have that growing up. So it really meant like you had to think about what you're going to put your, you know, convince your parents to put your money down on, right? And so that is a sense, that's essentially what we wanted to kind of craft and create. Especially if you know, if we're targeting people who are coming into this world for the first time, you know, and that's sort of like, you know, for me, it's like, yeah, you can play in here and enjoy it for $20, you know, at the moment, even now, like it's $17.99. So it's like, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you know, it's okay. There are other games out there that are super cool that you can enjoy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, fresh off this partner preview, April 23rd is coming quick for PC gamers, Xbox gamers, PlayStation gamers, Switch. It's coming quick, man. You're in this last stretch. Are you, is it more anticipatory or are you getting nervous?
It's nervous. Yeah. it's coming fast, man. The days are kind of turning over very fast, but I'm also really excited. Like we've got here, man. And you know, even just getting a game from beginning to the finish line is a feat. Anyone who does it, like it's such a feat, and I have so much respect for them, man. So yeah, there's a part of me that's so proud of the team that have built this, like the families that have supported this, and just like they're just the people who supported this, and like yeah, I'm excited for it. But yeah, there's always that element of nerves that kind of is alive there as well.
Well, Abubakar Salim, you are in the home stretch. I wish you all the best. I'm so excited for people to play your game. Let those who have enjoyed the interview, who may have just been introduced to you, know where to find you on socials and where they'll be able to pick up your game when the time comes.
Yeah, so we're all over the place. We're on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. You can find us on Surgent Studios, which is, you know, that's our handle everywhere. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter as well, just my name. It's actually Abzi Salim on Instagram and Abzi Babzi on Twitter. And our game is everywhere. So, you know, you can go to the EA have a brilliant website where you're able to kind of choose your platform as well, be it either Steam or Xbox that you want to play on. You can go through that and find our game that way.
There you go. Well, thank you again for joining me. Stick around after we click out of here. Have a great rest of your week, listeners. Take care.